Blog Talk Radio.
Like the folks you meet on, like to plant my feet on the Brooklyn Bridge. What a lovely view from heaven looks at you from the Brooklyn Bridge. I love to listen to the wind through her strings, the song that she sings for the town. I love to look up at the clouds in her hair. She's learned to wear like a crown. If you've been a rover, journey's end lies over the Brooklyn Bridge. Don't let no one tell you I've been trying to sell you the Brooklyn Bridge. All the folks in Manhattan are sad, 'cause they look at her and wish they had the good old Brooklyn. Been a rover, journey's end lies over the Brooklyn Bridge. Don't let no one tell you that I've been trying to sell you the Brooklyn Bridge. You'll miss her most when you roam, 'cause you'll think of her and think of home, the good old Brooklyn.
Everyone, this is Howe's New York with Brooklyn real estate attorney Robert Howe. Tonight's episode is a recap episode. We're looking back at the biggest real estate news stories from Brooklyn in the month of April. And as always, here is our host, Robert Howe.
Well, welcome everyone to Howe's New York. I'm your host again, Robert Howe, and we're talking about a multitude of topics, including real estate, community politics, and any hot topics of the day. We're broadcasting from an undisclosed location in Brooklyn, New York, to a potential audience stretching from Longyearbyen, Norway, to Ushuaia, Tierra del Fuego, thanks to the power of Blog Talk Radio. We're here tonight with my executive producer, Jason Versace, of Rising Tide Marketing. And as we've done every month, we brought you a recap. This is the recap show of real estate in Brooklyn in the month of April 2016. Jason, once again, has scoured the internet and all real estate periodicals to find us the best stories about Brooklyn real estate. And tonight is no different either. So, Jason, why don't you start us off with a couple of things you found that struck you happening in Brooklyn real estate in the month of April?
Well, I don't know if we want to lead off with the story, which maybe paint the show is with the theme of the world is kind of upside down now, because we have a person from the real estate world who is now one of the nominees for president. So I don't know if I want to attach that to Brooklyn and give Brooklyn any credit for that, because he did start off in Brooklyn. But it's just further proof about what Brooklyn can do for you. And this story, whereas on its face it might seem absurd, it's been in a few different news outlets, and you could take it for what it is. I don't know if you want to call it somebody being maybe very ambitious or a little bit, you know, off their rocker, or maybe just trying to capitalize on the surge in Brooklyn. But it comes to us from MarketWatch.com, which originally appeared in the New York Post. and then, like I said, a number of other media outlets. But it's basically maybe the smallest single-family home you might find in Brooklyn. It's essentially a shed. It's in Gravesend, and the asking price is about $500,000 for this property, and it's serious.
Well, this is a marketing masterpiece by none other than Anthony Mussolino, a real estate neighbor of ours here in Bay Ridge, and he really was able to capture, just like Donald Trump, capture the news headlines with a very outrageous property, outrageously priced. But who knows? Maybe you could get that price for this kind of property. I'm looking at the pictures of this, and I guess you could, if you lay down lengthwise, your feet would probably touch one side and your head would touch the other side of the property. But it does have the looks of a house, and our realtor friend Anthony Mussolino says, yeah, it's got a bathroom, a gas, heat, hot water, and you know, it's definitely I guess you could, if you likened it to the size of a small co-op or condo, it's probably about the same size, although it's not stuck onto you know, a larger property. It's by itself. But I think, did he say 400 square feet or so? I'm just looking for the square footage. But it is pretty small. 12 by 26, yes. So,
structure, and it's just on a 20 by 9. But I mean, and I, going back to the whole picture, I wonder if pictures might have been a bad way to go to market it, if you wanted to maybe like keep the mystique and just gone with the headline and not shown anybody the pictures. And I do wonder if, you know, there isn't somebody out there who will eventually scoop it up around that price, because it may also not only, for the sake that it is a actual property in Brooklyn, but then you also have this novelty attached to it, where you might somehow, in some strange way, capitalize or benefit from this. You're the other person who bought this house that was in the news, and it does have some air of novelty about it.
Yes, and isn't there that show on cable TV, people who like to live in tiny houses, for what reason I don't know, but they like the tinier the better, and this probably might be a contender for you know, one of those shows, you know, one of those small houses that they, as opposed to most of the housing shows which show gargantuan properties, this is definitely at the other end of the spectrum. Well, Anthony, you know, besides being a marketing master, does have something else in mind. He wants to sell a lot next to it, along with this house. And I think the whole price of the tiny house and the lot would be $899. But Anthony has done a good job in bringing people's attention to this location by marketing the house individually. If someone wants to, you know, buy a little house and have be known for having bought the smallest, most expensive house in all of Brooklyn.
Well, amazingly too, is that it was built in 1920, so it's approaching 100 years old, and that is a fine piece of craftsmanship for that structure to have withstood 100 years of the elements, and it almost looks like the big bad wolf could have blown it down. But it is a pretty cool story, and people are talking about it. So more power to him. He's got it in the news, and I would not be surprised if that little shack gets sold.
There's certainly a house and a tiny house for everybody who wants tiny houses.
Well, our next story is pretty interesting. It comes to us from cranes, and it's, I think we've touched on this from the viewpoint or standpoint of the shared living space or residential. I think it was one of our last, may have been our last recap episode where we talked about the living space where you share a small apartment and you get either your own room or you're in a shared bedroom and that type of inventory, which was becoming more and more popular. This comes from Cranes, New York, and it almost is the same concept just from a commercial angle. The co-working boom, is it going to be the next real estate bubble? And WeWork, I think it might have even been the same company that was creating these living spaces. They're looking at growing their office sharing business in Brooklyn. And it's an interesting concept. And I know that they have some of these office parks in Jersey, but the whole idea of creating these little real upscale, high-tech, boutique spaces in Brooklyn for the our new influx of high-tech young professionals, it's pretty interesting.
Well, it's yet another takeoff on the idea of these baiters put a lot of people together into a space and maybe they can collaborate and there can be some savings in terms of rent or utilities or leased office equipment. And I guess we've gone from, it used to be very fashionable to have for a company to rent an entire floor, and who got the corner office overlooking, a very desirable view of the water maybe, or facing Manhattan or the Statue of Liberty. Things have generally moved towards, Mayor Bloomberg used to have what he called a bullpen, just a big open area. Everybody was sitting out in the open, and there was no privacy, no private swanky offices. Everyone kind of felt equal, even though they may have had different titles. When it came to office space, they were all equal. And maybe some collaboration occurred. But what's interesting about this article is that, of course, the first person to do it was outdone then by another person, to take that idea and further hone it, polish it, make it bigger and brighter. And so everybody in the earlier space said, look, this is an old space, let's move to the new space. And in as much as there was just, maybe one person could rent, a space, they could very easily move to the next shinier, bigger location. I think that's kind of what this article is also talking about. And so when you mentioned, could it be, forecasting a boom or a bust, I should say, in this type of property.
Well, another element of it that it touches on is pointing out that when small businesses start up and look at a brick and mortar, it's very, very costly. To meet that rent is a very heavy burden, and it notes that while a lot of startups will wind up failing, some of those startups could potentially take their landlord down too, if they fail and then they can't pay their rent. And then it goes from that example to the example of one of the people who owned a co-working space that took a 5,000 square foot space and created this co-working environment where today it draws revenue from the individuals that work there. And there's 120 different members from 30 different companies in 15 countries in housed in this 5,000 square foot space. So it seems to have come a long way already.
Yeah, well, I guess it also, as you point out, provides protection for landlords. You know, now they've rented to 200 tenants, even though it could be a cubicle, rather than four or five tenants, and you know, who might rent an entire floor. And if one of them goes bust or grows out of the space, moves to another location, then that landlord, you know, has suffered a big loss. So he really has a lot. I guess the landlord's theory is to have a lot of eggs in the basket in case any of them break.
And from the renter's perspective, and they're in a you know, nice work environment. It's a clean cut place where you could probably bring a client and sit down and have a meeting in a common conference area where you're not, you know, going to meet the Starbucks, or and then you probably have a communal tech center where you've got your hardware that you need to use. So it's a lot of form and function for what seems to be a pretty affordable price if you're going by the individual.
Right. For the a tenant, it's probably a lot more flexible. They can be a lot more nimble in the event they need space. Maybe there's additional space that they can get in their current space. If business doesn't pan out to be the way they expected, they could probably pair off some of their space. And I guess it allows for a lot of nimbleness.
Yeah, it sounds like a concept that is probably only going to continue to grow as we kind of morph into this a real different professional society where we're really downsizing and telecommuting and working in smaller spaces and companies are small and there's a lot more little startups. So it seems like Brooklyn is really kind of at the forefront of that, of this, I don't know if you want to call it this kind of shift in how folks work and where they work. And not only that, but some of these people might be living in a space similar to the space that they work in.
Exactly.
Well, our next story comes to us from Real Estate Weekly, and it touches on, again, a space where these tech tenants are looking to move into Brooklyn warehouses and turn where we're seeing again where there are huge massive structures in Brooklyn that have gone unused or maybe have already undergone the repurposing into office space from, you know, what they might have been in the past warehouses, and now we're drawing in these medium, mid-sized companies, large companies like Amazon we spoke about, and a lot of these smaller companies, these smaller startups, that are looking for space for their tech companies. And this is just another what's a growing list of spaces in Brooklyn that are being converted for these purposes.
Yeah, well, if you drive through the industrial park area of Sunset Park, below Third Avenue, there are some massive properties in there that you really can't appreciate even if you're driving along the Gowanus. Yes, they look big from the Gowanus, but get down inside and drive along some of those buildings, and they are a city block big and several stories high, big windows, and these were big windows. You know, really, they were more purposeful for back when the place was created for factory workers to get enough light, natural light in their space. Now, 50 years later, they're back in vogue because people like to work in bright, naturally lit spaces, and these old manufacturing buildings are really ideally suited, to that. And don't forget they have the Bed Bath & Beyond. They have a Micro Center computer place down there. NYU took over Lutheran Medical Center a while back. So Industry City has a lot of retail stuff going on in it. So really a lot is happening in Sunset Park, and these big buildings have just come back to life in a matter of 10 years. 10 years ago, partly vacant, in the state of disrepair, not much activity on the streets. All of a sudden, with tech incubators, sharing of space, the millennials moving into the Williamsburgs and the Bushwicks and wanting to work in these types of businesses, get somewhere by bicycle even. This was really, you couldn't have planned it any better.
Yeah, and it does seem like Brooklyn is almost taking the approach that, like out on the West Coast, where they've got the Googles of the world housed in their massive, massive campuses, now that they refer to them as, where people go to work in these almost Garden of Eden type settings where everything is there for you, and you could, when you need to recharge or refresh your creative juices, there's no shortage of really uber new age things that you could take advantage of right, where you work. Transfer it here to Brooklyn, where we don't have the space like that, and we don't have obviously a lot of the outdoor geography to kind of house places like that. But it almost makes you think that either the businesses or the people who own the businesses or are running the businesses want to set up their business and their employees in an environment that exudes this old world charm. And Brooklyn still has, we talk about it all the time, like living in Brooklyn, is people want that, to be in this this area, which is the fourth largest city in the country, but also it retains some of its neighborhood feel. It's got, so now where you're working in maybe an environment where it doesn't feel like you're in a concrete jungle, you're in this neighborhood suburb that's got tremendous history and charm and a lot of beauty in its own right, which is not necessarily surrounded by nature, but it's got its own character about it, and I think that that's probably what they're going for.
A lot of cobblestone streets down there, railroad tracks going through it, massive old-style buildings. Yes, much better than being on the 23rd floor of East 51st Street off Madison. Has a lot more charm, a lot more, allure to it, as you point out.
Well, our final story of the recap, we're going to look at a story that comes to us from New York One. Talking about speculators coming into an area, East New York, looking to buy up people's homes, offering cash, and this is a occurrence that has maybe got this area and the neighborhood caught them off guard, and they're saying that they're being approached with all cash offers, and it makes you wonder, what's going on? Is this the new target? Is this a new hot area for development? Is this what's going on?
Well, with a couple of things with East New York, a high amount of foreclosures. Many of these people were taken advantage of by unscrupulous mortgage brokers who would tell them to buy properties, and they could finance them at 106%. They'd walk out of the closing with cash in hand along with a house. Don't worry, in a couple of years we'll do another refinance, and you can even get more cash out because your property is just going to keep rising in value. Well, that didn't happen, and many of the products that these people were sold were adjustable rates. They adjusted, and all of a sudden what was very affordable and cheap now became unaffordable. Maybe the property values didn't rise as fast. Maybe they couldn't then refinance. So they got caught up with a lot of things, a lot of currents going against them. Foreclosures, you know, became high. And so that's one thing that's going on, the very high number of foreclosures in this area. And then the city, as it is trying to move along to its more affordable housing goal, has targeted East New York as an area that has a lot of open spaces and is pretty ripe to put up, assuming they can find developers to do this, ripe to put up, you know, new affordable housing apartment buildings and attract a lot of people. So our investors are rushing in to try to buy up surrounding areas. This is not like a boom that one's going to see or has seen in a Williamsburg or a Bushwick. This is more a boom because investors are seeing that the whole neighborhood will probably be going under development, and they're looking to get in on the ground floor. So that's when you see these signs up, need to sell quickly, call this number and we can close in 10 days. Basically, that's, I read those signs as call us, we want to steal your house for as little as possible and turn it around and make a large profit for ourselves, sign. But unfortunately, so some of the less sophisticated homeowners may be facing foreclosure, probably looking to grab these deals. The investor buys the property even though it's in foreclosure and then negotiates with the bank to accept less, and they're really off to the races. So I think that's what's kind of going on in East New York. It's more of an investor-driven than more so hipsters, millennials trying to move in to these spaces. I don't think that's what's going to happen out there. I think there'll be affordable housing. But in the meantime, they are going to push out. You know, once the city rezones something, that's a code word for property values are going up. And with property values going up, tends to be the local residents can't live there anymore and get pushed out. Where they're going to get pushed out, pushed to, I don't know. There's not much areas left in Brooklyn to be pushed to, but I think that's what's, that's what's going on here.
Well, with that, we've reached the end of our episode. Another interesting slew of stories in our recap, and we will be back again next month with our recap, and in between them we'll have some episodes coming up dealing with some of the local things going on like Memorial Day. So with that, we will close it out. Bob, take us out.
Well, thank you, Jason, and this concludes tonight's radio program. Thank you, Jason, for finding all these interesting articles about what's going on in Brooklyn real estate. And thanks to Blog Talk Radio for hosting our show. This is How's New York signing off. God bless Brooklyn and all of its people. Wishing you a good night and a good morning and a good afternoon. I'm your host, Robert Howe.
Like the folks you meet on, like to plant my feet on the Brooklyn Bridge. What a lovely view from heaven looks at you from the Brooklyn Bridge. I love